find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Y'all remember Super Chicken?
Besides, you knew the job was dangerous when you took it. He will drink his super sauce and throw the bad guys for a loss, and he will bring them in alive and kicking. There was one thing you should learn, and there is no one else to turn to. Call for Super Chicken.
Okay. Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Dudley Do Right was a Saturday / Sunday morning cartoon growing
up. I remember
up.
Dudley Do Right.
And Dudley Do Right had the first part of the show, and then they took the end. But in between, they had all these shorts, and one of them was Super Chicken.
No kidding.
I was waiting for the chicken dance song. It's actually what I've been waiting
for. Oh, yeah.
Maybe we'll have to do a chicken off dance at the end of the broadcast.
Well, that's a DJ contradiction here to pull it up.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Wrapping up on chickens.
Well, let's wrap up on the stacking functions. It's really the conversation.
Okay.
The permaculture chicken eats bugs. They eat weeds in our backyard. They make monster diggers. A chicken will dig as well as most any dog. So they're loosening up the soil, helping us. They make poop for us, chicken manure for our gardens. They give us eggs. So this one asset called a chicken does all of these great things for us, helps us in our landscape. They're really workers in our landscape. So that's stacking functions with a chicken.
I have had chickens for over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot imagine ever not having a chicken. I know that's a funny thing to say,
yeah,
but I cannot imagine ever not having chickens.
Yeah, exactly. I've had them actually at the urban farm for 20 years this year. It's nice having fresh eggs. I don't eat eggs.
The difference between something out of your yard and something from the store. The pancakes are different color.
Yep.
The food's different color.
Tomatoes. You grow them at home from the vine versus what's in the store.
Oh, yeah.
It is a night and day difference.
This is the reason I do what I do. You guys realize that, right?
Oh, of course.
This is my whole gig. We need to be growing our own food because it tastes better. It's more nutritious. We know what went into it. And it just tastes better because it's more nutritious.
And we don't have a lot of natural disasters in Arizona,
mm-hmm.
but there are natural disasters that disrupt our supply chain.
You know, this is an interesting conversation. I don't know that we've ever had this one before. They did some research out of the UK, and they found that there is only a certain amount of days of food in any urban area. How many days?
I think you've said three before.
Exactly. 3 days. So I guess we did talk about it. But we have a 3-day supply of food in any urban area. Here's the crazy thing. If there was a whiff that there was going to be shortages of food, I'd say we have 3 hours of food,
right.
food in the grocery store, right? Then it's just going to disappear. And I'm not talking about end of the world stuff. I'm talking about a power outage. Fall of 2014 in San Diego County, they didn't have power for 3 days. Truckers strike or, you know, these kinds of things. So we really need to be a lot more conscious about where our food's coming from.
And just the enjoyment of doing it, gardening itself.
Yeah.
Working with the earth, working mm-hmm. with the soil.
So stacking functions. So let's just touch on that real quickly because it just doesn't have to do with chickens. When I went back to school late in life. I ended up at Arizona State University. That time I got my bachelor's and I got my master's. My master's is in urban and environmental planning. And one of my planning classes was transportation planning. And we talked about trip stacking.
Grocery store, the hardware store, and the gas station all
exactly.
at one time instead of three separate trips.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's exactly what it is. And it's like, oh, all right. So, you know, in 1991, we were talking about stacking functions. That's a really simple version of stacking functions that, you know, that we can use for people to get it. And then, you know, one of the things that I do, we run evaporative coolers, one for the chickens, one on our house. We take that water. It goes through the evaporative cooler first, and then it goes out into the landscape. So, you know, that's another stacking functions.
So chickens are function stackers. you function stack your water.
Yep.
Are there other easy function stacking things we can do at our urban farm?
Well, the cool thing about stacking functions is if you start paying attention, they're all over the place. And really, the whole purpose of looking for stacking functions is how many times can you use a resource before you're done with it? And so one of my stacking functions for the compost coming into the urban farm, the compostables coming into the urban farm, was the worm bins. So let's talk about worm bins, because when people say, you know, I have a few kitchen scraps and I want to compost, that is in the last segment we're going to talk about everything it takes to actually traditionally compost. You need a lot of stuff. And if all you have is kitchen scraps, get a worm bin. You know, Arizona Worm Farms does classes monthly out at their facility on, you know, building a worm bin for underneath your sink. You can actually keep it inside, and they work really, really well. They don't smell. And, you know, before long, you have this really nice soil that happens, you know, the worm castings that happens that you can put on your garden. So it's really quite simple. You need a tote, you know, a tote about, what is that, about 20-gallon tote maybe?
Okay.
15, 20-gallon tote. And I usually get the super heavy-duty one with the yellow lids on them. And you put a layer of, you can start with shredded newspaper on the bottom and then put your worms in there. And they're specific kind of worms. You need to get composting worms, put their worms in there, and then you just start feeding them, you know, food. And there's usually enough water in the food that it breaks down and keeps it moist in there, and they're really fast. If you put a half a pound of worms in a tote like this, it's not going to smell. And, you know, within 3 or 4 days, you're going to see worm castings, worm stuff happening.
And when you're talking about this tote, mm-hmm. and you said the heavy one, something, I'm like a Rubbermaid tub
yeah.
with a lid. On that lid, do you have to drill holes for air to circulate? Or
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you need a little air circulating out of the top.
But you won't smell it.
Okay. It's really amazing how that works.
Do worms procreate more worms if you just leave them alone?
Oh, yes.
So you have enough for fishing. That would be my department.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Well,
and fishing, if you catch fish.
There we go.
You can stack a lot of functions with fish.
Yes, you can.
Right?
A lot of butter, garlic, and.
Hey, Pocahontas yeah. and exactly. Sacagawea with the corn and the planting and the pilgrims.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting hungry.
A lot of people don't know this, but my first business here in the 1970s, I used to clean, service, and build fish ponds for people from 1975 to 1984. That's what I did. And one of the subsets of that was I used to convert people's swimming pools into fish ponds for them. At, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old, I was going into people's backyards and making them into aquaculture ponds. And we were raising fish and to eat. You know, that was the whole point. So, you know, I was playing with that way back then. And
as you say, we need to do a broadcast on aquaponics and fish raising, but I won't ask any questions about that because I know we can get completely sidetracked down the rail, but we need to put that on the counter list.
Let's do that next year. That'd be cool. That'd be cool. Because, you know, if you like protein, aquaponics is a certain kind of aquaculture. You know, you can raise fish. My buddy Chad over at, I can't remember his business name, but he sells aquaponic systems. He calls them fish-powered gardens. So the fish, this is regenerative thing again, right? The fish are pooping in the water. That water's getting pumped into the garden beds. It's going through the garden beds. The plants are cleaning the water and feeding it back to the fish so that the fish have clean water. This is that circular system that we're talking about.
And I have heard of a guy who introduces chickens into that. Like he lets the chicken manure
uh-huh.
into the water, and yep. the fish will actually eat the chicken manure
yep.
and make it manure again. But it also yeah. makes food for, you know, helps the fish grow. So yeah. you could stack an additional chicken function in there.
Exactly. Exactly. It's amazing to me how many ways, when we look to nature, how many ways there are that we can work with nature rather than against nature.
All of these things take water. And mm-hmm. that is, you're on a flood irrigated SRP,
property. Yep.
Which is, you know, if you live in one of those, God bless you, they are just phenomenal properties.
I did that on purpose 30 years ago. I've been at the urban farm 30 years. I know you guys have been on the air 31 years, right?
Yeah,
31. Yeah. And I purposely found a flood irrigated property to buy because I grew up on one when I was a kid.
And so a lot of people look at our water resources and say, you know, it's not sustainable to be using water for all these other things, but everything takes water. The generation of food, the transportation of food, bringing it into the market takes water. You know, bringing in the supplies, are we consuming more water by consuming things that are shipped in? Or if we just grew things ourselves, are we reducing our water footprint? You know, I don't know that there's an actual study that could, or a way you validate, could calculate that or validate
there,
it.
There, but, is, okay. there is a ways it could be calculated. And, you know, that's a, that would be an interesting project. I'd get, if I was going back to school to get a PhD, that would be one of my projects. It's like, what's the truth about that? Because you're right. If we're shipping a, you know, this time of year, we're shipping citrus from South America. And what is the environmental cost to ship it from South America? In the wintertime, we ship, you know, peaches and from South America, right? Or Australia. That's, that one even gets me.
And, you know, we export a lot just the same to other parts. And you know, that's one thing that always kind of
baffled you.
Yeah. Like, okay, so we've got alfalfa farmers here that are exporting alfalfa. And we've got alfalfa farmers over there that are importing it here.
Yeah.
Why don't we just
grow keep it all in the same place? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, this has been an interesting episode today. Because we keep bumping up against this notion of what is truly sustainable, what can we do? You know, I know down near Gila Bend, they're growing all kinds of alfalfa and shipping it to the Middle East. You know, there's a company that does that.
Well, and part of it is a Middle East company because they can't grow their own alfalfa. Exactly. Well, they can't expand their farms, but they have an increased need for alfalfa, so they've been buying land here and exporting it
back. And really what they're shipping is water.
Yeah.
You know, it's a resource that they're using. And does that make sense? Not really. You know, these are all questions that come up in this whole notion of what do we do with our food system and how do we make it
You know what
else
was in Gila Bend? The shrimp factory. Did you ever see the shrimp farm? I think it went out of business a handful of years ago, but that was an interesting concept.
It's still there.
Is it still in business?
Yeah, it is.
Oh.